This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieber. Good morning, Robert. Good morning, evening, afternoon to all of you, dear listeners.
Peter, good morning. It's the last episode of the year, and as always, we are ending with something different from all the other episodes. Peter, we have invited a guest. Andreas Schachel is joining us. Welcome to the podcast, Andreas.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yes. Before we bombard you with questions, please introduce yourself briefly in a few sentences.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Andreas Schachel. I'm one of the two founders of a company in Austria that is called Responsible Annotation Services. And we are providing services around data annotation and data preparation for the training of AI models.
And Peter, we met Andreas at our event AI in the Forest Part 2, and we were very impressed by their solutions, right?
Exactly. That's why we have you with us for our final podcast of the year, Andreas.
Yes. Andreas, responsible annotation. What does your company do? Why is it responsible to annotate?
Perhaps it's easier if I explain a bit how all of this started, so it makes more sense why the name of the company is like it is. So actually, there is an NGO in Austria that is called Responsible Annotation, and this NGO has the aim to help companies that are struggling with data annotation and want to have the highest quality that is possible. And the special trick, if you want to call it like that, is that in this NGO, it was found out that people who are neurodivergent, most of them are in the autism spectrum, have very special skills and capabilities when it comes to data annotation. So what was seen there was that where neurotypical people often struggle to keep up the high focus and the high concentration that you need to have if you want to do proper annotation, may it be bounding boxes, may it be image segmentation or others, people who are in the autism spectrum often have a very high level of focus that they can keep up for very long time, so up to a couple of hours per day. And the NGO Responsible Annotation wants to help companies that want to set up a neurodivergent team on their own in the organization of the company. And what we saw in the NGO, and by the way, I'm also a member of the NGO, was that some of the companies were hesitant to set up a team in their organization in the first place. There are various reasons for that. One might be that their annotation needs are not high enough. If you are at the very early stage of machine learning, for example, you would probably not need a dedicated team of annotators that are working for you.
My team of annotators lives in Kenya.
That's a different topic. Yeah, that's also true, because what we can see is that in general, many annotation companies are located in the, I would call it, typical outsourcing regions that might be either in Africa or in Asia. And if you're working heavily on machine learning, you want to have a team that is close to you, also culturally close to you. And that was another idea behind the funding of the GmbH. It's a typical Austrian GmbH, Responsible Annotation Services, where we said we want to provide now the services with a team of people that we have hired now that are mainly in the autism spectrum. And we can provide local services with the highest quality by hiring people in the autism spectrum that can really bring a new level of quality to the table when it comes to data annotation.
Yeah. So how is that working? So potential customers, you know, people listening now and say, oh, that's quite interesting. I assume they can contact you. And what are the next steps then? Is anything different from, you know, them having contacted a company, as you say, in India or any part of the world? How, what are the steps typically taken by yourself?
So first of all, we provide different services, or we offer different services. So depending on your needs, it could be that you, for example, say you are already in a very mature stadium of machine learning, and perhaps you even have instructions for annotation. Then we could, for example, help you by reviewing the instructions if you're struggling with your outsourcing partners, for example. And we would be reviewing the instructions. We would be reviewing the results with our highly skilled annotators and provide feedback to you. If you are in a level where you are at an early stage of machine learning projects, we could offer you to really sit together with you. Somebody would visit you. Probably it would be me. We would be talking about what are your goals in your machine learning project. We would have a look at the documentation and at the data to see if, for example, something needs to be adjusted in the data itself. So we are seeing ourselves as a holistic provider, and based on where our customer is standing at the specific point in time, we then try to tailor our offerings to your need. So we are very flexible in that.
Right. But from a principle, there is actually no difference from, you know, getting, let's say, in general, annotation services from any other companies, knowing that the people doing the job are in the autism, or as you call it, neurodivergent space.
That's correct. I think what we perhaps, or where you would notice the biggest difference to a typical annotation provider is exactly the quality. And in order to achieve the highest quality, we are writing a so-called annotation handbook. So where for a typical annotation provider, often you have just annotation instructions that are only 1, 2, 3 pages. Those annotation instructions are called a handbook with us, and they can be very extensive. So at the first view, this might be, or some people are thinking, hey, this might be something that is too much, or we are putting too much effort in it. But what we learned already from our customer projects is that especially at the end of the project, every customer was more than happy to have this highly detailed annotation handbook that, by the way, is nearly audit ready. So you could even use the handbook as kind of a documentation and hand it over to an auditor. And based on that handbook, our people are really doing the annotation letter by letter as it is described there. And therefore, we provide the highest possible quality. So, for example, in a typical project, and we are typically working in sprints, so 3 to 4 week sprints, after 2 to 3 sprints, there are 0 questions by our team to the customer team, and there are typically 0 issues raised by our customers to our team, meaning that they are still reviewing what we are providing to them, but they couldn't even find anything that they want to have changed, or where you could have a different opinion on something, because we have so high level of quality in our annotation instructions.
What does it mean, high level of quality? Do you have some KPIs there?
KPIs is always a difficult topic because it heavily depends on the project and on where we are standing. We are measuring different aspects. One of the aspects, some of the aspects I've already mentioned, we are measuring, for example, the turnarounds that we need when we deliver a result back to a customer, and how often we have to do modifications based on something that we have already delivered. And as I said, our goal is that after 3 sprints, we are down to 0, meaning there are 0 iterations. We are always a one shot. The first shot always fits. We have done some measurements also in the past, and just for the last project that we have finished, it was very, we were very happy to see that it worked like that. the customer did some KPIs on the model and on how precise the model worked, and they were always around 50% accuracy. And then they used our training data and the data set that we have annotated and did one more round of training with that data. And the overall accuracy of the model was increased by 50% already. So we ended up between 75 to 80%. So there is still room left. But it shows that we have just added one small data set to a way larger project. And due to its highest quality, the overall result was increased significantly, I would say.
Okay. But you are more expensive than the guys in Kenya, right?
Absolutely, we are. We are offering, so our people, and that's very important for us, they have totally fair work contracts that are on the all.
So really work contracts, not like the in Germany, you have when you have a autism spectrum, you get, I don't know, €5 per hour, something like this.
No. They are under Austrian IT Kollektivvertrag, the collective bargaining agreement. They are all employees. We don't have only like work contracts where you are just here for a limited amount of time and after that you will be made redundant. We are also offering our people the support that they need to show and shine. We have a network of social workers and also medical staff in the background that can support the team if they would be struggling, for example, with daily routines or so. And we also offer our people the opportunities to develop their skills and go above and beyond also in their personal life, meaning something like a career for them, where some of those people never had a real job before they started work with us. They can now kind of see a career for them and deliver their skills in a thriving area of IT.
And you make them a taxpayer at the end.
Exactly. One of our kind of elevator pitches at the beginning was make them from charity receivers to taxpayers.
Yeah. Peter?
Yeah, it's amazing. Measuring quality, just one step back, has been one of my favorite topics throughout my, not career, just from finishing my first university, actually. But you give a great example there. I mean, the people who give you a job, they want to get a certain quality, which you gave an example for, they can measure. And then it's in relation to the price. And they can then decide, they're going to get other quotes from other companies and they can decide what to do. Now, the question I'm going to have is like in this spectrum of, let's say, you know, you listeners say, okay, well, some of you may be interested in the fact that the people doing this job are, term you said, neurodivergent, which is not a term that I've heard many times, autism. Other people may, other of you listeners may not be interested at all, let's put it like that. You just look at the price in relationship to the quality, and you make a decision for or against. And then even other people, that's the question I think I asked you at our AI in the forest as well. It's like, is there a third category of people who have a little bit of a weird feeling, you know, they say, oh, can we do that with these people? I mean, they are in this space of neurodivergence. And do you have that experience that people are, maybe they would like to work with you, but they have a weird feeling?
There is, of course, some sort of uncertainty. And basically what we are offering is in the first place to new customers, the first thing that I keep saying is, if you want the highest quality and you are unsure at this point, let's do just a test sprint, a relatively short one. Let's see how we get along. And you can really see then the results of our work. And when those people really see that the quality is as good, they get more interested also to learn more about the people in our team. And for example, in one project, it was then that also our neurodivergent team members got curious to find out a bit more who the customer was. And after a couple of sprints, they asked to join the sprint retrospective meeting. So it's very important for me that we are doing sprint retrospective also with our customers together, with the customer project team. So my team then also wanted to join. They had the wish that they would only be joining as silent listeners because they were just curious to find out who was sitting at the other end, let's say. But I found it very interesting, and so did the customer project team, to see that there was some kind of getting closer to each other, understanding each other a bit better, and also by working on the same handbook together. I think this also helped a lot, raising the awareness of what being in the autism spectrum really means to people that are not in the autism spectrum, because based on the questions and based on how we wrote the handbook, they could also see and learn how the different patterns in the brains of the people in the autism spectrum are working. So I think, and I'm somewhat proud to say that, I think we can even help by including the people now in this IT project where they typically would never ever be on board, and therefore also on the other side, non-autistic people getting to understand better how autistic people are seeing the world and what makes them comfortable or uncomfortable.
You already mentioned your pitch, right? From charity to taxpayers. But is your pitch maybe also from more European sovereignty when it comes to annotation?
Exactly. That's the other thing. And that's what we can see. So we have lots of requests at this point also from big European Union projects, because also there it's very important that data sovereignty is a topic and data protection. And typically we even prefer to work in our customers' environment. First of all, our customers don't need to be afraid that data is kind of leaked or will be breached or something like that. And secondly, they can directly see and monitor our progress within the system, and we can collaborate in their system as well. So I think it's a win-win situation. We don't have the kind of regulations and everything in place to host something on our own. The customers don't have to let go of their critical data, and also can directly see where we are standing. And also, as I mentioned before, we are typically offering agile contracts, meaning that if for whatever reason the customers would not be happy, he can terminate the contract after every sprint, basically then just disable our account, and there wouldn't be any need to delete data or so. But I will also like to add that we never had the situation yet that the customer was unhappy and ended the contract before the term was over.
You mentioned customers. Can you share some branches you are in and some typical use cases you are working on?
So it's a very interesting mixture, I would say. We had, for example, surveillance of critical infrastructure as one, where it was mainly about video annotation. We had medical appliances, where it was regarding skin lesions. We were in talks with someone from the agriculture industry. That was very interesting. But unfortunately, the project for other reasons did not start. And at this point, hopefully directly before closing, another contract that is from an activity tracker point of view. So you can see there are really very different topic. It was LiDAR data that we looked into, so like point clouds. We had audio annotation. So I think that's also something that makes us a bit special, that we basically say, you tell us what kind of data you have, what your needs are, and we will make it happen, because that's another strength, that we have the dedicated team. And I mean, I think that's pretty well known that with the outsourcing providers, often you don't even have like named users or single persons behind one account. For us, it's a dedicated team, it's trained people, and it makes sense to train them also on other technologies that we wouldn't have seen yet. So we're not afraid of any challenges there.
Final question I have to you, Andreas, is tell us, how do you see the future of annotation with or without neurodivergent people? When is AI, Gen AI, whatever we're going to call it, AGI, capable of understanding the world around us, because that's what I believe annotation really is, right? By itself, how long are we humans needing to tell the algorithm what it is that we see and experience?
So I guess that's the million-dollar question of some sort. And I would like to give a bit of a differentiated answer to that. What I do think is that at least in the near term, meaning 3 to 5 years, definitely annotation services will be needed in the broad market, meaning that there will be no kind of off-the-shelf product available that will fulfill your annotation needs, especially if you're not totally in a mainstream area, to a level that you can use it for machine learning training. After that, for the next probably 5, 10, or even 15 years, I still do believe that there will be either niches where you still will need manual annotation or at least semi-automated annotation, meaning that a human being will be in the loop and will be either just reviewing the results that will be generated by a neural network or whatever else might be then. So I think also from that perspective, and after that, we will still probably want to have a human in the loop for critical areas, because at this point, I'm not seeing it that within the next 10 to 15 years, we will be there that we can blindly trust AI to provide the data to train itself when it comes to areas where damage in people might be involved, like automotive, like aeronautics, and all these kind of things.
Andreas, final question. You also published, or you also developed, a test everybody can take online. Is that right? An annotation test?
Exactly. So the NGO Responsible Annotation is hosting a platform that is can be found under www.trainingstation.at, where everyone that is interested can have a look and work through 7 levels of annotation. So you can do the annotations there. It's mainly bounding boxes, and you will be presented then a result against a model solution that we did. So you can see how precise your bounding boxes are compared to the ones that we would be doing.
Okay, Peter, now we have something to do for Christmas.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to. I assume we're going to share the link
in the show notes.
Those people that didn't write it out. Yeah, I would like to try it out during the Christmas days. Yeah.
Andreas, it was a pleasure. We keep our fingers crossed for you and your company. A very great approach made in Europe. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure for me as well.
Thank you, Andreas. Good luck.
Good luck. Before the podcast ends, let's do a quick review of the year, Peter.
Yeah. I'd like to do that. I looked this morning, which maybe I've done before as well, just quickly at the topics that we've had. Maybe we just want to spend like a minute on that. So from single usage points to a number like 4 or 5. So we looked at the history of AI, Jay Lee, you recall. And we talked about GPUs, CUDA. They are just single mentions.
The end of GPUs, right? The end of CUDA.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. The end of CUDA.
Yeah.
That was announced. At
least. Yeah, exactly. It was announced in our podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Greetings to Jens.
And by the way, dear listener, you can always go to, we typically refer to Spotify. You can go to our website, aipod.de, and you can make searches. So if some of these terms that we're here mentioning here, you can always go back. And you can just go back yourself, look back a year or two or three and see what we've been doing. Engineering, we did a couple of times. Data science, MCP, A2A, a couple of times as well. Education was there a number of times. New materials was a topic we did a couple of times. Gen AI was still there. You know, it was number one, I believe, last year, right? Then we did time series, XLSTM and Tyrex, also a couple of times. Then we get to, I have like 3 mentions, which is in general the applications and solutions of industrial AI, data sets and quality, safety and world models, PINs. So they are all three mentions. And then there's one where we had, you know, we dealt with four times. I brought it together as algorithms, LSTM, but also reinforcement learning, TAP-PFN, AutoML, so all the algorithmic approaches, I would say. Then robotics and humanoids, especially the last couple of weeks, you've been doing a lot in this area.
In robotics, yeah.
Five times, I would say. But number one was... Which one I haven't mentioned yet?
I think number one was you did an episode with humanoids, right?
Yeah, that's a, but that, I included that in the number five. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I meant the number one is agents.
Agents, year. Yeah.
I do believe that agents. Well, if we look back, that it's still difficult to put them into these categories. But I do believe that agents was the big thing, and if I now quickly think about it, still, I would almost say that still. The point of which we is the discussion which we started at the beginning of the year, where we said agents were looked at 25, 27 years ago. And that was still the discussion I saw just a week ago. So it's depending on where people, where listeners, where other people are. You know, we started saying that a year ago, and it's always the hype curve. I still believe in the positive, in the, what is the hype curve going to the top and then the trough of disillusionment, and it needs to come out or not. I'm sure, not sure where we are, but that agents will come out and will be useful. AI agents will come out and will be useful for us.
Exactly. And what was your favorite episode, Peter?
I don't have
As always, you don't have a...
You always like to ask me that. I don't have one, but you tell me which one was yours. Maybe I agree. Maybe suddenly one comes into my brain. Maybe I'm a too diplomatic person, although being Dutch, not being diplomatic at all. There you go.
I have one news from today, because you mentioned MCP, right?
And all right.
They now donated MCP to the Linux Foundation.
I saw that as well. Yeah.
So very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk as we always do. Typically, if we find a couple of minutes, we look, Robert and I, we have this overview, which is already filled again until summer or sometime. And you and I always look at it. And the use of MCP in an industrial environment, I already have arranged an interview at the beginning of the year. So yeah, I do believe there. I mean, MCP was more like, I recall the typical picture of, I think on the left hand, there was, or was it more like, I think they were saying we have 10,000 MCP servers, but there's only one request for all of those.
So exactly.
We need to see. We need to see if maybe next year MCP is still going to be there. And if we do the same review a year from now, if MCP is still maybe, we'll see it, how important it will become or not.
I think let's come back to our favorite episodes, because you forgot our India special, right? We had an India special.
Now, there you go. I only have one more thing that I have here. When I did look at the countries as well. We had one from Australia. That was Peter van Schalkwijk. Very Dutch name.
From Australia.
We had four from India. That is your point. We had five from the United States. And, of course, the big majority, 40 plus or something, from Europe. So, yes. We had a special from India, right?
Exactly. And I think my one of my favorite episodes was the episode with Philipp Lippe from the Gemini team from Google DeepMind.
The
Philipp Lippe, the Schalker Jung. Yeah, right. Jung. Everybody was surprised.
You need to translate that, Schalker Jung.
Schalker Jung.
Schalke is, what is Schalke? Schalke is an area in the Ruhrport?
No.
If even I don't understand it, maybe some of our international listeners won't understand.
There is a city in the Ruhrgebiet, and it's called Gelsenkirchen. And one part of Gelsenkirchen is called Schalke. And there's a soccer team there, and it's called Schalke 04. Yeah, exactly. And Philipp was born in Gelsenkirchen. And if you are born in Gelsenkirchen, you are automatically Schalke 04 fan. And he's a Schalke Jung, so he's a boy from Schalke, and he's a fan of Schalke. And it was a very interesting episode. The guy from Gelsenkirchen is now working on Nano Banana at Google DeepMind. Very, very great career by Philipp.
Right. Yeah. He was born there. And actually, I was born not too far away from there, just on the other side of
the border.
What already at that time was an official border, but not a real border between the Netherlands and Germany. Nevertheless, I don't know. I don't have a favorite. It's amazing what you and I, what we've been doing again. At least we are very proud of it. I think we say thank you to our promoters, to Siemens. We do have had Hannover Messe as well, beginning of the year, right?
Exactly. Thanks a lot to all of our listeners all over the world.
Yeah, you are the most important.
Yeah, most important. And we will see each other in January in Amsterdam at our first event in the Netherlands. We are looking forward to meet Stratis, Gaffis, and Kees Snoek in Amsterdam. I met the guys at Neurips in Copenhagen. We had some beer together and discussed some ideas about our event in January. But before we do that, we wish all our listeners happy holidays and a good start to the new year. And Peter has now something very special for you.
Yeah, I join you, Robert. I say thank you to you, Robert, for having
Peter,
my co-producer for this year. I'm looking forward to another year together with you. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for you having been our listeners. Looking forward to have you with us again. And yes, I will move. I'm sitting actually in the exercise room of what I saw in a Netflix series is actually called a marching band. I believe in American English.
Yep.
So what we do not only march, but that was the translation.
Exactly. My daughter is also playing in a marching band. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you shared something where she was playing the saxophone, and we have saxophones as well. I play the baritone. I'm already going to say thank you, bye-bye, have a great Christmas, and I'm going to play for you a song you should, or most of you should be recognize it. I hope you will recognize it. You won't hear me again. You can listen as long as you like to. It's going to be like 2-3 minutes.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wonderful, Peter. Thanks a lot.